Welcome, 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 the 90 Day Money Pro Podcast. You have found it. You're in the right place to learn how to make smarter money decisions in the right order. This episode is starting now. That's right. We've got North Carolina on our mind. What a great week. Broadcasting live here from the Money Pro Tour RV. That's right. It's Dimitri Neistat. And y'all will like to hear about some cool things that we've got going on this podcast episode. Listen, talk about serendipity. I happen to stumble upon the hashtag Red4Ed Teachers March rally that was happening all over the country. I stumbled upon it in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's right, a rally in Raleigh. Say that 10 times fast. But there were over 10,000 teachers all marching, wearing their red shirts, different slogans, signs. It was quite a sight to see. I gave a lot of high fives to teachers. What a cool day. And just hearing about what they were fighting for, what they were marching for. You know, look, I'm sure you all would agree, teachers in this country are not paid enough. In fact, there were so many that every single one who I spoke with, we're talking dozens and dozens of teachers, every single one was working at least another job, if not two or three other jobs in addition to teaching full time, just to be able to make ends meet. So we're going to be chatting more about that on this episode. And then as the Money Pro Tour spread, not only in Raleigh, but drove through Charlotte, North Carolina, and then went on to the coast through UNC Wilmington and Wrightsville Beach, a conversation that kept popping up over and over again: student debt, student loans, and dealing with the stress of those stressful loans, and understanding how to make smarter money decisions when it comes to financing education and paying back those loans. Should you be paying them back as quickly as you can? Should you be paying them back slowly and just making minimum monthly payments? What the heck is IBR and 10-year versus 20-year terms? And oh man, we're going to dive deeper into that in this episode. So we're going to be chatting about the teachers. We're going to be chatting about student loans. And we've got a couple of cool anecdotes as well, as always. So stay tuned. A lot of fun coming up on this episode. No one should be an amateur with their money. Instead, learn to be a money pro. All right, so riding through North Carolina, I first feel like I got to tell you guys a little anecdote about where I currently am. The Money Pro RV, as you know, we're trying to keep costs down. And so very rarely am I actually paying to stay at a campground. In fact, probably I'm only doing that about once a week. And I'm usually trying to schedule that around needing to empty out my black and gray tanks, refill on fresh water or propane, because campgrounds are great for that. And, you know, needing to do laundry, for example, a campground usually costs anywhere from $38 to $54 or something like that. So usually it's anywhere from, you know, around $180 to $200 or so a month for four different campground stays. But where am I staying when I'm not staying at a campground, you might be wondering? Y'all will know Cracker Barrels. I got to tell you, as a Boston boy, I've never really been to Cracker Barrels before. There aren't too many up in my neck of the woods at all, but they are very RV friendly and literally let me stay there overnight with special parking spots for buses and RVs, and they've come in super handy to be able to stay there. But I got to tell you, I think one of my favorite little hacks has been staying at a hotel that offers free breakfast. I'm not going to shout out the specific chains because I think that might maybe put me on blast a little bit more than I'd want to be. But, you know, look, let's just suffice it to say, here in North Carolina, I slept in a lovely hotel's parking lot overnight and walked in this morning and got me some free breakfast. So shout out to that little hustle. I'm sure y'all will appreciate that little that little nugget, that little anecdote of how I've been able to, let's just say, score some some free meals. I know our good friend over on Twitter at Saving Sherpa will appreciate that. He's always a big fan of finagling free meals whenever you can. Shout out Saving Sherpa on Twitter. So let's chat about North Carolina. Guys, this teacher's rally, hashtag Red for Ed. Let me just say, if you're not familiar with this in the city or the state that you live in, do yourself a favor and take a few minutes and research it. Chances are you'll be moved and touched and want to take some sort of action and have your voice be heard, because in your city or town, the quality of the education and the way that kids, classrooms are situated is so important. Let me give you a few examples in particular. Guys, I saw a sign at the Red for Ed Teachers March. It said 30 is a speed limit, not a class size. Wow. Right? Imagine being a teacher who's responsible for 30 children. Not only that, so many of the teachers who I spoke with talked about needing to come out of pocket, not just for school supplies, guys, but literally for snacks in their classroom, because they know that there are children who are hungry in their classroom. In the United States, 1 out of 6 children is food insecure, which means there are question marks around where their next meal will be coming from. That really hits me hard. And I'm sure that for all of you listening, you know, that's a number. 1 out of 6. That means that in a 30-child classroom, you have 5 children who are hungry, who don't know where their next meal is going to be coming from. That's terrifying. And that's not okay. And so part of what the Red for Ed rally does, and the marches all across the United States to so many different capitals, is to really bring attention to the government, to the local government, and the way that dollars are being funded within education to make sure that more resources are available. For example, to make sure that there are enough social workers / therapists who are available on staff, on site at schools to help students and children dealing with difficult life situations. When you have troubles at home, when you have, you know, a challenging situation like that, to be able to ask a teacher to be not only an educator, but to be a healer, to be a parent. I mean, that's so many different job titles that are on the shoulders of these teachers, many of whom, guys, let me just remind you, are making somewhere in the $30,000+ per year income range. I mean, after taxes, after their pensions, many of these folks are living on take-home pays of less than $2,000 a month from their full-time jobs. And that's just not fair. Hearing some of the presidential candidates in the running for president for the 2020 election talking about a minimum $60,000 per year salary for all full-time educators. I love hearing about that kind of stuff. And there are absolutely dollars within the government to be able to allocate funds to do these kind of things. The teachers are making sure that their voices are heard. And there are precedents of teachers going on strike in different states, getting the income raises that they and the school bus drivers and the cafeteria workers and the janitors, that everyone deserves to be able to really invest in our children, to invest in the youth. Because I'm sure that you all would agree that from a financial perspective, any dollar that is spent on education, the result of that dollar comes back tenfold into the economy. By having more educated students who are able to succeed better, we're able to help them be more productive and less of a drain on society and more of an addition to society, helping them be winners. That's what this is really all about. And so many of the teachers who I spoke with were just really venting their frustrations. And there were teachers who have been teaching for 20+ years and are fighting to make sure that these changes occur. They might not see them within their careers, but they want to fight for younger teachers to be able to have these rights, for students of the kids that they were teaching, for children of their students to be able to have a better pathway ahead for education. I'm sure that's something that we can all get behind. So y'all, Red for Ed, hashtag REDFORED. Do yourself a favor and check that out. Make sure you also check out in the link in this podcast, you will see a Linktree link that will link you directly to my YouTube channel, where you can actually hear some of the interviews that I had with teachers talking about, there was one in particular. When a student asks for a pencil, right? Like, as a teacher, you can't say no. You have to give them a pencil. And where does that pencil come from? You had to buy it as a teacher. And if you don't buy it, then the kid doesn't have a pencil. And what kind of education will they have if they never even take their notes and won't be able to do their homework? Ugh. Watch some of these interviews and comment below on what's most moving to you. Maybe you can tell me what's the best thing that you learned from one of your teachers, right? I think we all have highlights from our childhood. I'll tell you, my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Lyons, has still to this day, you know, been a role model to me, someone who I can look back on and say that they told me that they believed in me. And that changed my life as a kid growing up in Greater Boston, as an immigrant, as an English as a second language, you know, Russian was my primary language. I come from the former Soviet Union. In case y'all didn't know that, Dmitry, Russian name, yeah. So, Red for Ed, do yourself a favor and check it out, and keep fighting, teachers. We're on your side. We are your biggest cheerleaders. In my career, I've helped so many public employees, teachers, nonprofit employees, police officers, firefighters, ambulance drivers, that just to be able to show folks that you don't need to be making $100,000 per year in order to be financially organized and live with financial peace and have a confidence when it comes to your money, rather than feeling like you're scrambling, living paycheck to paycheck. No one deserves to live month to month when they're working as hard as our teachers are working. So y'all, after Raleigh, I ended up driving through Charlotte, North Carolina, and at a local dog park where I was with Brady, the good old finance Frenchie. That's right, you got to check him out on Instagram, at the finance Frenchie. I think he's more Insta famous than I am. He's got more followers and more lovers and everything than I do, right? And in Charlotte, we spoke with a woman who was a licensed clinical social worker. And she was telling us about quite a few things. Again, her YouTube video of a full interview is on our YouTube page at the Money Pro Method. And that's really, again, what we're teaching folks, how to not just be amateurs with money, but to be a money pro. And she was telling us, she goes, yeah, you know, Dmitry, when I was graduating from college, I knew I was going to have a lot of student loans. You know, I just knew it. To be licensed and get the education that I needed to do the work that I do as a social worker, I needed to get a higher education. And I didn't have the money to pay for it up front, so I knew I was going to be taking out student loans. But her words, let me just repeat this phrase to you. God bless income-based repayment. It is a godsend. How many of you guys can empathize with that? So for those of you who don't know, student loans have a repayment plan that is very flexible. So if you have $50,000 of student loans or $100,000 of student loans, income-based repayment, known as IBR, means that your minimum payment is capped to a certain range based off of how much money you're making. So if you're graduating with $50,000 of student loans, but you're only making $50,000 a year in gross income, a percentage of that salary of $50,000 that you're making is going to be put towards those student loans. There's a maximum so that you're not going to be drowning in a monthly minimum payment that is $1,500 a month, right? The other thing that folks need to realize is that when they're graduating from college, and this is something this woman and I chatted about a lot on our YouTube video and on our interview, when folks graduate from college, their student loans are naturally put on a 10-year repayment plan. And what does that mean? Well, it means that their minimum monthly payment is structured as such so that if they make just the minimum payments, their loan will be paid back after 10 years. What I advise graduates to look at and how to be a hashtag be a money pro means to understand what your options are. Let's say with $50,000 of student loans, on a 10-year repay plan when just graduating, maybe your minimum monthly payment is going to be $450 a month. And you might think, holy crap, $450 a month, that's like half of my rent, or that's might be what I'm paying in rent. I mean, oh my gosh, what a big payment. Well, if you were to refinance that to a 20-year term, and the interest rate was more or less the same, you'd be looking at a minimum monthly payment that's probably closer to $250 a month. Let me ask you, as a recent graduate from college, which one of those minimum monthly payments would cause less stress in your life, $450 or $250? No brainer, the answer is $250. But you might be saying, Dmitry, I don't want to take 20 years to pay off my debt, my student loans. Well, here's the great thing. Just because you're on a 20-year repayment plan Does that mean that you must wait 20 years to pay off your student loans? No. Just like when you have a mortgage, even if it's a 30-year mortgage, does that mean you have to wait 30 years to pay off your mortgage? No. That's just the term that determines your minimum monthly payment. Can you pay more than the minimum? Sure. Can you make lump sum payments at any time in the future? Yup. Sure. Can you shift money from a checking or savings account or investment account and pay down the balance at any time? Yes. So with that in mind, think about a 20-year term where the strategy is, okay, I'm going to pay $250 a month, but with that $200 that I just freed up, instead of paying that extra to the student loan, I'm going to increase my savings. I'm going to make sure I have a Roth IRA. I'm going to make sure that I have renter's insurance and disability insurance so that if life throws a curveball at me, I'm protected against things that could go wrong and kick me backwards. See, to make sure that you're building your financial plan in the right way and not just being laser focused on paying off your student loans, these were conversations that happened both in Charlotte and in Wrightsville Beach, where we were chatting with two grad students from the University of Wilmington, North Carolina, UNC Wilmington. Same conversation. You know, they were frustrated that when they're graduating, they're going to have this huge monthly payment. And this girl goes, yeah, I want to pay that thing off as quick as I can. If the minimum is $450, I'm going to pay $1,000 a month. When she realized, well, oh my God, well, if something happened and you got sick or hurt and you couldn't work, or if you got into an accident, or if life just threw a curveball at you and you needed money, maybe your student loan balance wouldn't be $50,000. It might be $20,000 in a few years. But if you have zero in the bank, if you haven't been saving, if you haven't been setting aside dollars for your retirement, then you're behind the eight ball. You could be having to liquidate retirement accounts, having to take money out of savings, or having to build up credit card debt, which is much more toxic than student loan debt because it charges 3 to 4 times more in interest for the same balance. So the point being, the lesson being on how to be a money pro, is to realize that student loans are not the most toxic thing in the world. In fact, if student loans are the most toxic thing in your financial world, meaning you have no credit card debt, you're properly protected, and you have a full emergency fund, then you should look at it as a choice. Do I want to overpay and get rid of this low fixed interest rate debt, or is real estate more of a goal for me? Do I want to stop renting and paying someone else's mortgage and own my own property? How much of my income am I saving for retirement? Have I maxed out my Roth IRA or Roth 401k yet? Question mark. Right? That's a really important question to be asking yourselves. And making sure that if you overpay your debt, you're doing it on purpose. And that you're not just doing it because you think that's your only option. Right? So in North Carolina, guys, from teachers and education to student loans, I think that's really the common theme for North Carolina that we came across, was realizing that, hey, you don't need to be making $250,000 and getting rid of your student loans in 5 years to be financially free. You can graduate from college and make less than $100,000 a year, pay back your student loans slowly with just minimum monthly payments in IBR or a fixed low rate 20-year term loan, while emphasizing protecting yourself the right way, setting aside money for your future at a high gross savings rate, meaning if you can save 20 or 30% or more of your gross income while still paying down your student loans slowly, that's a great thing to do. Dimitri here, signing out from this episode of the Money Pro Tour podcast.